From Noble Robot on East Hennepin Avenue in dog-friendly Minneapolis, this is Nice Games Club, the show where nice game devs talk games and game development.
I'm Alan Burns-Johnson, and I make nice games.
I'm Stephen McGregor, and I make nice
games. And I'm Arthur Croy, I too make nice games. Stephen, Dale, and I are going to Origins this week, and we're making some quick plans to pitch Dogpile while we're there for the GLOM premiere. So we're going to do some planning for that right here on the show. It's a special, and so if everyone's ready, let's start. Dogpile.
The Twin Cities are very dog-friendly.
Yes, and we were frantically looking up like a fun adjective to put at the top of the show.
Yes.
To illustrate that point, and then it was like, oh, right, it would just say dog-friendly.
You just said that, yeah.
Because that's what, because it really is.
That's what it means.
Sometimes we stretch it a bit, dear listener, for the, you know, lexicographers in the audience.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's just true.
Yep.
Dog-friendly Minneapolis.
Yep. I kind of wonder if people just, like, ignore the adjective at the top of the intro anyways. They just, like, don't even pay attention to it.
Nicegames.club/feedback.
Yeah, I hope we do think about it probably more than is probably, needed. Yeah.
Well, we used to have two.
We did.
I don't know what gave us such confidence that we could do that every time.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know. Oh, wild. Today we're recording. It's Juneteenth.
Yeah.
We get that day off now. People have been celebrating it for a while, but not. It's a federal holiday. Is that the correct term?
You know, it is a federal holiday, but individual states then, you know, that's usually what governs whether your employer gives you the day off.
Yeah.
I think is okay. If the state recognizes it. I mean, I'm like a freelancer, so like the holidays have never mattered to me.
Yeah, that's interesting because, like, you know, my job is all remote. So like, how do they determine that? I know that we have a person who lives and works from Australia, and his holidays.
He's got to go to work today.
Yeah, exactly. His holidays don't tend to line up with my. Well, he has the day off too, but like I think he has to take. He tends to take time off.
Freeloading Aussie.
He tends to take time off when he has a public holiday.
Yeah,
and we didn't have that day off.
Exactly. So, everything's the opposite there. Just like the holidays.
Oh, right. So they only work everything on our holidays, and they have all the other days.
Right. Exactly.
Makes sense. But yeah, I had the day off today, which was nice.
I guess the price of like cultural supremacy in the world is that our Australian remote colleagues can take their holidays and our holidays off, and we don't get to take their holidays off.
Yeah.
I mean, fair.
Yeah, all right. You can get something out of that.
I wouldn't be surprised to learn that, like, the standard Australian gets more time off than the standard American because our time off in this country is.
Well, there's, yeah, that's really a separate issue, but for sure.
Yeah.
But then, and they get our holidays.
Yeah.
Oof.
Dang.
I want to borrow someone else's holidays.
Yeah. Well, Juneteenth is a newer holiday in terms of its celebration, but it's been around forever.
Right.
And so I think a lot of people are like unsure of like what to do. Like,
oh, gosh. Last year, I should find a link, but there was some really bad marketing.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Things. Oh gosh, it was.
Oh
so funny.
Boy.
I'll have to find a link on it. I don't want to say it on the show. It's not like terrible, but it's just like.
Yeah. Like people are trying.
Yeah.
Maybe they're not trying as hard as they should, or maybe they're trying a little too much.
Yeah. It's both. It's both. It's great. Yeah.
It's a summer holiday, so it's like barbecue.
Yeah.
Right? That's.
Yeah.
You're done, right?
Yeah, basically, and it's close to like July 4th. Like, my family, we didn't really celebrate Juneteenth. We would just do, like, a barbecue on the 4th of July.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. But, yeah, I guess that's basically what we do is you just barbecue.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
I mean, go to the library and get a book. Like,
yeah.
It, like, make add that and you're set.
There you go.
You know, have some hot dogs and read some W.B. Du Bois and you're good.
Yeah. I like it. Okay, so our plan, we're going to Origins.
Mm-hmm. What's Origins, Steven?
We're cool
you didn't
people.
Put that on the script.
I did. It's right there.
Oh,
it's
it
like
is.
The fourth
it's
bullet
the,
point.
It's the Origins Game Fair.
Yeah.
With 5,000. I'm not reading this.
Yeah, the point wasn't to read.
Basically, we just go and there's a bunch of board games and people play them and there's a lot of people who go to this thing.
Yeah.
Apparently, premieres happen here because GLOM will be there. Premiering?
Yes, our card game GLOM, which is out now, nicegames.club/GLOM for links to purchase your copy today.
Mm-hmm.
It is going, our publisher is going to premiere it there.
Yes.
And none of us know what that means.
Right. We'll find out, I guess.
So we're driving to Ohio to find out.
Yeah.
I'm just going to stake something in the ground here so that reality can be different.
So we can check this later.
Right, exactly. It's going to be like like unveiling with a blanket over the top of the sheet. Exactly. Like there's a box on a fancy table and then like a nice like satin sheet goes, wah, and there's like special lighting on the box.
Stacks and stacks of glom.
Stacks of glom.
People are just hoarding in to get in.
Yeah.
I was thinking there's, you know, a giant ribbon and they have big scissors and they.
Oh, dang. That's way cooler.
Right? Yeah.
Or like a table full of glom. Uh-huh. And then like no
and
one can
no one can get it, right?
Yeah.
And then they.
And they're all waiting and people are shoulder to shoulder and then there's a stampede.
Just like the iPhone.
Yeah.
Just like
a new iPhone.
Exactly.
But I mean, one person sprains their shoulder, but otherwise no injuries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for
right,
sure.
Right, right.
So, you know, not crazy.
But yeah, we're gonna go be there. They were talking about us maybe signing some boxes.
Yeah, I asked Sydney like, hey, we're gonna come check it out. Is there anything we can do to help hype or and we'd love to say hi in person because we haven't met her yet. And she's like, yeah, we'd love to have you like come, you know, hang out, or do demos and sign boxes. And I'm like, really?
That's a thing?
I don't know if it's a thing or she's just being nice, but maybe we'll do that.
Yeah, I suppose people are interested.
I mean, some of it's a little bit like, I also want to make sure I'm cognizant of not like disrespecting this hobby. Because like, I don't know about you, Steven, but I definitely still feel like an outsider to board games.
Yeah.
And so part of me, like we went to Gen Con together a couple years ago just for funsies. And I do remember walking around going, these are all board game players and I don't belong.
I felt that way too.
Yeah. And you know, there's like a cultural sort of you know element to it that you just don't get right away.
Yeah.
And you know, luckily I've been in enough of these types of spaces that I didn't feel alienated by that, but I did feel sort of apart from everybody else.
Yes.
And so I'm gonna have that feeling again, but at the same time I have to make sure like I am also trying to hawk a product, so I have to make sure that I'm not dismissive of whatever you know traditions or. You know, cultures that are part of that.
Right. But it's one thing to like, you know, go to an event and, you know, not necessarily feel like you mesh with them because like you don't play a lot of board games. Yeah. It's a whole other thing to be like, you can sign boxes because you made a game.
Yeah.
Is that like a regular thing that people do?
Yeah. And if it is, then I want to make sure that like I don't giggle too much about it.
Yeah.
And if it's not, because, you know, people do like to collect board games.
Yeah.
They like to collect, especially like, you know, niche or weird, unusual board games. And I think when games premiere, I wouldn't be surprised if people are like, they like to make bets on what's going to, they want to be in on the ground floor of a new game.
Yeah.
So I could see that, but I'm just making guesses.
Well, also to be fair, you know, we do a podcast and there's like 300 episodes of this podcast and we make the game on the podcast. So it would be understandable for someone to come to this thing and be like, oh, nice games club is there. I like them. I would like my box sign.
Right. There's an outside chance that like somebody there might know who we are.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I never take that into account.
Well, it is a possibility.
Yeah. I am just kind of excited to see it like a bunch of them on a table, you know, on the show floor.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
I'm excited to get my copy.
I think you guys are going to have a lot of fun. My sister and the group of friends who came with her from going to undergrad in Madison, Wisconsin, and like a bunch of them moved to the Twin Cities. Mm-hmm. So she just like came back and pulled all of her friends with her. It's quite amazing. But they're all big into board games. And they have... I don't know if they've been doing it every year. I mean, obviously, COVID kind of put a damper on things. And then some of this group has started to have kids. And so that can also be a tough thing to do. But they used to go like every year to Gen Con, I think. Mm-hmm. And they would like dress up.
Yeah.
And
do this whole thing. And so they'd always come back with like the coolest new stuff that's super weird and stuff like you wouldn't even be able to find it on retailers. They would just like sell out at the convention.
Mm. Yeah.
I think you guys will have a lot of fun.
I do remember when we did go to Gen Con, one of the things I did like about it is it is kind of like going to the mall.
Yeah.
When you're a kid and you just like, I don't know what I want, but I got $20. I'm gonna get something.
Yeah.
Right? I'm going to go to Sam Goody and buy a record and have enough for a pretzel. Mm-hmm. Like that's kind of the attitude you'd have, you know, a weekend at the mall as a kid. I mean, I grew up in the suburbs, so that's all the culture I had. But I had that feeling too. It's like, you know, I'm like, okay, I've got my credit card and an adult income. Yeah. I'm going to look around and just see what's fun. And that's silly, but that itself is kind of worth the experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's enjoyable. It's,
yeah.
There's some joy in being a consumer and finding something you're not going to see anywhere else. Or
yeah. Yeah. Whatever. Or you know, might not get the chance of buying it again for a while. Like, for example, some places are sold out of glom already.
Yes. That is interesting.
Crazy.
Right.
A ton of online retailers are stock glom, which I don't know how normal that is, but that was fun for us to see. Mm-hmm. And a couple of them have indicated that they've sold out already.
Yeah.
Which means they had 5 copies.
Who knows?
Or a lot of people bought it.
I don't know.
We don't know.
I don't know. Right. But like, you know, the publisher's going to have some copies at the convention.
Yeah.
So this is like, this happened with a couple of games that my sister brought home from conventions, where like she bought them at the conventions. And then because they had just started the run and this was like a premiere or whatever it was, and they were testing the market, like those games just either didn't sell well enough to get additional printing, mm-hmm. or they weren't printed again and I haven't found them again, you know, even though I've looked. So yeah. So like you can't get that again.
Yeah. Yeah. There must be tons of brilliant games.
Yeah.
That just had like a logo that turned people off, or something in the rule book made it harder to explain to other people.
Yeah.
You know, little things that are just fixable or not really deal breakers, but meant that those games never got second printings or, and just only a couple people even know they exist.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, like, I love weird niche games of all sorts and all media. And I've played some really weird niche board games and gone to go try like to find them, and I just can't.
Yeah.
You know, they're just out everywhere. And that's kind of a bummer. But like, part of the experience is having the chance to like try those games out on the floor and then like maybe buy them at the table. And
I'm starting to realize the reason that I'm having trouble relating to a lot of this is I don't have any closet space in my apartment.
Yeah, that has something to do with it.
You can keep them here.
I can. Yeah. Oh my God. You've opened up a whole world to me. It's going to be a mess.
This is literally where Star Trek Ascendancy is.
Yeah, half of that shelf over there by the door is board games right now.
And more than half of that is just Star Trek Ascendancy expansions. Yeah.
But there's this whole, like, you could introduce this as, this is our recording booth and Mark's game closet.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Anyway.
So our intention, one of y'all's intentions, because this was something I didn't agree with initially, but I'm okay with it now because it ended up happening.
We've bullied him, folks.
Basically. is we're going to end up pitching Dogpile. Not like hard pitching it, like really beating the drum, getting people to know about Dogpile, but like you set up a meeting with Sydney.
Yep. We're going to talk to our publisher for Glum and said, hey, we've got a pitch, which is maybe not finished. And she's like, sure, I'd love to chat about it. So that's very generous of her, because I didn't promise we're taking your time for what might not be a fully polished pitch. Mm. But then at Gen Con next month or beginning of August is when we talked about this in our Nice Thinking episode about the future of our board games, that we want to actually pitch Dogpile, but we're going to do a trial run.
Yeah.
And so this episode is kind of what that looks like.
Right.
Dale and I have been doing some work on getting the sell sheet together, and I've been doing some graphics for a prototype, because I think that will look good on a sell sheet, and I think will help us, because I think you have to see past dev art, that's my supposition anyway.
It's hard to picture what a thing will look like until.
I think the thing about Dogpile that's different from Glum, and I think that helped us with Glum is having that, you know, nice looking materials. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much it helped us. But for Dogpile, it started with the theme. Like the prompt was make a game with 100 dogs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the theme is really important to the game. Mm-hmm. And so I think the more we can prove that the theme and the mechanics are a good pair, and the more we can demonstrate that, I think because I think a lot of games are like, this game is so interesting and unique, polish up the theme, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
We'll work it out. Or the pitch doesn't have to include that. And that's great. But I think with this game, I think that really makes it more attractive, is that connection, that feeling of it's a, like the dog pile is a pile of cards. And without the theme, that's not very fun.
Right.
And so I think there's a bit of a more of an onus on us. I mean, that's in my head, that's how I feel. So I'm putting some materials together for that.
Yeah.
Dale wants to make a tabletop simulator version, so that we can leave that with Sydney, and then also if we run into anyone else at the convention that we want to hype it up to impromptu, we can give them that information.
Yeah.
With some new art and. Yeah, but the game, we don't have enough time to do more balance on the game or anything like that, and so we're not worrying about that as much. But the game as it is, it works pretty well, even with the current spreadsheet.
Yeah.
So that's, playable.
Do we need a Peter sheet?
A Peter sheet?
Yeah.
Which is our... Okay, so we should walk through some of the materials and definitions.
Yeah.
A lot of this is our learnings from doing Glum
that
we're sort of applying here. And we talked about this in that previous episode where we are kind of just repeating the same steps and hoping to learn a little bit more this time. Mm-hmm. But the first thing you put together when you want to sell a game is a sell sheet.
Yeah.
And this, Peter helped us a lot understanding what this is. A one sheet is something I'm familiar with in other industries, pitching things. A sell sheet has some specifics when it comes to board games.
Yeah.
The things a publisher needs to see on there, the things that they don't need to see on there.
Yeah.
And essentially, it is like a flyer for your game that is as little information as possible to deliver as much information as possible, right?
Yeah.
The first things you need are like some basics, like how many players, what's the age range, things you'd find on a box in a store, which is a little strange to me because it feels like, do we need to get that specific? But I think that really helps for a publisher, this is my guess anyway, that it helps a publisher understand like, where does this fit in our catalog?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Like, okay, how many components does this game have? Are we going to be the type of publisher that could physically make this product, right? Whereas those kinds of details are less important to a video game publisher,
right?
Because it's all, you know, it's all ones and zeros.
Exactly. Yeah,
bits and other
you can
bits.
And you can figure things out later, and you can change your mind and stuff. But if you pitch a board game that says this is the kind of game you need pencil and paper for, the publisher would be like, okay, well, it's that means we have to make sure that we could only go for this if we could commit to manufacturing something that fits in a slightly larger box than just take cards or whatever. Or like, we need 300 meeples. Like, it's like, okay, better be worth 300 meeples,
Pass.
Right. But what you don't put on the sell sheet is like the rules.
Right.
You don't need to teach the game. Now, we got lucky with GLOM. GLOM is rewrite the phrase following the rule to meet the goal. That's the entire game.
Basically, yeah.
It wasn't luck.
Okay, it was genius.
Well, fair. Something between those, maybe.
A little column A. But I think most games are not that elegant or that simple, and that's not a problem for those games. And Dogpile is not that simple. And so what Dale and I were working on yesterday is how do we explain what play feels like, but describe it in terms of the theme.
Yeah.
So like you only have till the end of the day to get all these dogs to play with each other, right? That's the kind of like, that's the role-playing part of it.
Yeah.
But also it's sort of, when you start with that, then you start describing the rules, it's in service of that theme, and it makes more sense. Yeah. And just saying like, in your hand, you have cards with properties, and you need to have them match them up, sort of like a game of dominoes. And then they all need to work. And if they don't work, you put them back in the deck. And if they do work, you put them aside. And then you want to get as many as possible. Like, none of that sounds like a fun dog pile.
Right.
But that's the literal rules of the game, right? Mm-hmm. So kind of trying to find that middle ground, also hinting at like the complexity of the game. Like, how interesting is it strategically? And sort of proving that in like three sentences.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's hard.
It is really tricky.
Yeah.
This is why there are marketing professionals who do this.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All the time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Peter will be at Origins, right?
Yep, he's going to be demoing and pitching Final Strike.
Yeah, he's doing his own
down
thing.
There. Yeah. So we can maybe get a lunch with him. But
it would just be nice to show him Dogpile at the very least,
And just see
and also to hang out with him.
Yeah. Well, and I'm curious, for you guys, because I'm lame, I'm not going. Mm-hmm. But I'd be curious to hear the secondhand report of how Final Strike is received.
Yeah.
I mean, I know they've been showing it a bunch, but.
Yeah, logistically, what is the steps now? Because they did a GameFound campaign, which is like Kickstarter for board games.
Yeah.
And it was successful.
Yeah.
What now?
Right.
I don't know what now.
Lots of legwork. I don't know. Peter does some magic and then there's a game.
Well, he's, Peter Lehner essentially self-publishing it. So
Right.
I think they go to get an audience, get people in their Discord, get people hyped.
Right.
And get people, I suppose, I'm guessing you could probably pre-order from a GameFound page after the campaign is done. I imagine that's a mechanism I don't know. He's just doing the job as a publisher, I think.
Right, right.
It's tough.
Yeah.
By itself, too. That's a lot to hold on your own,
Mm-hmm.
Well, work together, the two of them.
Yeah.
But still.
I guess I'm under the impression that Lane is doing a lot of the development work.
Gotcha, gotcha.
You're just doing a lot of
the
publishing work.
And I don't think Lane's going to be there.
Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah,
We'll not let's not bug Peter too much.
Right. Yeah, he'll be busy. Plenty busy.
Yeah, yeah. But no, I offered to take him out to dinner after when we get back.
Nice.
So he can give us some feedback. So when we do the proper pitching at Gen Con, we have the benefit of his wisdom.
Yeah. That's great.
And he was like, sure, I'm happy to help. So
free food. Okay.
It's not me.
Right. So we should, I guess, discuss what it is we want to do for these pitches, right?
Like, yeah.
Well, you've been, so Mark, you've been working on some art.
Yes.
I have been working on some art.
That's not it.
No, no. This is the one sheet that Dale was putting together.
Okay.
So I've been doing, I made a new logo, which I'm really happy with. And I was really thinking about the aesthetic of the game. And I don't think we might have shown the prototype cards in one of the Dogpile episodes. But listeners are probably unfamiliar with anything up to now.
Yeah.
But I was really thinking kind of like a sort of Fisher-Price, Sesame Street kind of sort of like dog toy look.
Yeah.
Right? Cooper Black, if people know that font.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That kind of style. And
laugh.
It's the font that you see in fridge magnets.
It's the when I was after school and I got to play around with PowerPoint from Windows 95.
Oh, okay.
Yep. I knew that's how you would find your way there.
Yeah.
To that reference.
I know you knew.
Yeah.
I knew you. Yep. Steven's too young.
Didn't do that. It did mess with PowerPoint after school, but
And so that I kind of was like, that's fine, I guess, but I wasn't really feeling it. And so I was thinking more about how we have a color system for the cards, the properties on the cards.
Yeah.
So every dog has a beautiful hand-painted portrait, mm-hmm. or will, and then has three properties. An energy level from 1 to 9, and then we have one sleeping dog at 0 and one handful dog at 20.
Yeah.
So those are special cards. Mm-hmm. And then also has a size in 5 categories, which are the 5 categories of dogs: toy, small, medium, large, very handy, and then giant.
Mm.
And then also a personality. And these are ones that we've defined, and we gave them symbols in our prototyping. We didn't give them names. We didn't want to yet.
Yeah.
Dale came up with names for them all.
Oh, okay.
Playful, affectionate, loyal, protective, gentle, curious, reserved, anxious, needy, fierce, courageous, silly, and serious.
Right. We wanted them to be really broad. And also to be something where you could hear it and you're not, that it sounds like a specific dog, but a category of dog.
Oh my gosh, these are perfect.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know enough about dogs, but I'm saying these are perfect from a game design perspective.
Because the way it works is that the personality traits and the sizes, when you lay the cards out, you match those together.
Mm-hmm.
The energy level you match in sequence. So yeah. Two dogs with the same energy. That doesn't work, but right. A dog that has slightly different energy than the other, then they can play together.
Mm-hmm.
And so that works, but then when you have personalities, you want to get the two loyal dogs together, you want to get the two curious dogs together. Now, there's only one anxious dog, so they can't match with anybody.
Yeah.
And that's why some of those personalities are more rare, or at least in our universe of dogs,
mm-hmm.
it is a little bit more rare. Yeah. Now, you have the silly and serious dogs. There's two of each of those.
Yeah.
So when you pair them up, they're the silly twins, right?
Yeah.
Like that's, so there's the thematic connections really work with the distribution of how many of these have them. Now, you have playful and affectionate. Fully 25% of all the dogs are that or the other. Mm-hmm. So that is obvious, right?
Yeah.
But then you get down to like protective, which is, you know, the kind of the one that'll growl at a stranger. And then, you know, after 5 minutes, they'll warm up to them.
Mm-hmm.
That's 12% of dogs. That sounds about right. Right.
Yeah.
In our world anyway. And then you have the sort of gentle dogs, which, you know, it's a little rarer than that. We all wish that of our animals, but
yeah.
And so that is really useful for that. And so thinking a lot about how we had symbols for those, and I've been working on icons to represent those things.
Yeah.
But we also want to, for like a real good overhead view, have color coding for all these properties.
Mm-hmm.
Because the traits on the dogs are all unique. There's no dog that has the same of those three values. What that means is when you color code these sort of swaths of color on the card, they will from a distance be unique, each mm-hmm. card, right? Not just the portrait, which they will all be unique. But there will be a unique combination of colors. And that means we're going to have a lot of colors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I was trying to think about like, well, that means there's going to be some colors are going to sizzle against each other. It's not quite a palette because there's no harmony implicit in the system by which we combine colors with each other.
Yeah.
And each level of energy has a different color going from orange to green to blue in sort of gradation. So you see kind of a gradient as they're laid out on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of that combined with the other colors of the different properties, it's going to be a little bit of a mashup.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to think, what's an art style that makes sense for that?
Mm-hmm.
And I went to 1970s food packaging.
Obviously.
Bright colors, yeah. High saturation, low contrast, just blue on red. Just like, you know, using all the colors of the rainbow, in a way that felt bold and daring, because you want to get the, someone's attention in the store aisle.
Right.
And so you put clashing colors together. And so that becomes a style. Mm. And so well, maybe I'll put some example in the show notes, but that really inspired me because it felt like really suitable towards the contents of the game.
Yeah.
But also it felt like a fun, unique thing we haven't really seen before in or often enough, I think, mm-hmm. in a visual theme in a card game. And so started putting together things like that. And the logo was like, okay, like the sort of Betty Crocker logo, the Keebler Elf logo, like those logos, they're older than the 70s, but you see them on some 70s packaging, and right. Oh boy.
<It's>, yeah.
They use all the ink. And trying to think about how that works for us. So the dog pile is in a font that's suitable to that era.
Yeah.
The letters are kind of catawampus, in sort of in a dog pile fashion. Mm-hmm. My first logo had like the letters like on top of each other, a little more literally, and you know, which is like a little harder to read, but it didn't bother me so much. I refined that a little bit. I thought that was a little bit too on the nose. And so it was just more of a thinking about like, well, if I'm a brand manager at, you know, General Mills in 1976, like I'm actually going to think a lot more about the sort of Saul Bass international style. And I might lose track a little bit of the literalness of my brand. And I might want to make something that looks cool with neat typography with the new tools of graphic design available of the day. Mm-hmm. Like all the innovation was done in the 60s. That's done now. It's time for the copycats, yeah. Right? And that's me. And yeah. So that's what I, you know. So lots of role playing for me this weekend, trying to put together a logo. And you guys have seen the logo that I was sort of posting in the Slack over the weekend. We'll take a look at it here and we'll put that in the show notes as well.
That's just an actual dog.
Yeah.
That's a picture of an actual dog.
Right. I have to scroll past all of Ellen's. But this is where I landed.
I really like it.
Yeah. It feels like typographic in that sort of trendy style of the era. It's got the paw print over the E, which I think was the final touch.
So cute.
Which is really nice. And then it's sort of hanging over this sort of like miniature dog park, which is the setting of the game. And also, I mean, maybe this is because I'm an urbanist, but like, all 100 of these dogs are city dogs, is what I think.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure where you'd get 100 dogs in a dog park if not in the city.
True. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And actually gave me a thought, is that what we have a couple of special dogs that have special rules. Mm. 6 of them in our set of 100, so they're kind of rare, but they're really fun mechanically.
Yeah.
And one of them should be like a farm dog, an outsider.
Yeah.
Right?
Interesting. Okay.
I don't know what the rule is yet for that, but I think thematically that's interesting. These are all city dogs, except that one who just came in from... out where.
Yeah.
Anyway, but that's reflected in the design is that, you know, these aren't dogs in a field. They're not on the farm. They're in a park. There's a fence around it.
Yeah.
And that's the mechanically, it's a dog park with a fence around it. Yeah. So, I wanted to imply all of that. And then, but there's no actual dogs in the logo. Mm-hmm. And I kind of waffled on that early on. I'm like, oh, it'd be fun, you know, like the cute dog face, but like, no, it should really be the dogs are in the game. The logo goes on the box, right?
I like that. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, the paw print signifies dogs.
Yes. Yeah. And that was kind of my like, well, that's having my cake and eating it too a little bit.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, but in the way you can use the typography with the paw print without the little miniature dog park for a simpler representation. Mm-hmm. So that could be maybe on the back of the card could maybe just be the typography. Mm-hmm. Ellen, one of your pieces of feedback was that you liked the sort of airy bounciness of the logo. And you didn't like how dense it would get when the other components were added. And I think that makes sense if there's context for which we don't want that density.
Yeah.
And that might even be just the back of the card, which might be what people might be the kind of might end up being the canonical version of the logo.
Yeah. You
know, as we work through it. So thinking about like what the box art looks like, it's this plus more stuff. So maybe this is actually just maybe the logo is a little less than this.
I mean, I can just imagine this as the box.
Yeah.
Like you can imagine this just big dog pile logo with the little park and the grass and this kind of like light sea green background. And that's just the box.
Yeah.
Oh, real stark and simple. Definitely up my alley.
Like that's how I'm picturing it. This just looks like a box to me. It's just like, oh, perfect. And this is a box that I would look at. I'm like a dog pile.
Yeah.
Does it have to do with dogs? It does have to do with dogs.
Well, and here's the thing. We're thinking about that that, you know, that brand executive from the 70s trying to get your attention on the grocery store aisle. That's what board game design is.
Right.
Like visual design is the same thing when you're wandering through your friendly local friendly game game store. Is you want, you know, people judge a book by its cover, and so you want that to look good.
I think the box needs dogs on the cover.
Really?
It doesn't need it on the logo, but I think it needs it on the cover.
I was thinking that the box would be really busy.
Mm.
Yeah.
You'd have like a dog toys, and you'd have leashes, and you'd have, you know, and so maybe not dogs, but all the evidence of dogs.
Dog accoutrement.
Yeah. So it kind of like all the dogs are in this box, right? And this is the best mind, you know?
Yeah. Okay.
It might be a little bit too abstract.
Well, but we're not gonna, you know.
Here's the thing: the thing with Glom, the thing about my visual design for Glom was that I wanted to have no iconography.
Yeah,
I wanted it to be a word game.
Yeah,
right? So really, really like stark of that, and some of that survived to the final version. But of course, if we do work with a publisher, they're gonna have a say in all of this. Mm-hmm. So, but at the same time, I don't think that. I mean, one, I can't help it, so that's one reason. But I think also, I think it does benefit us to think about this stuff as part of our presentation.
Yeah.
Because that is definitely going to be one of the things that sells a product. Is like, I think when you're selling to a publisher, I think they are probably most interested in the core mechanic. That's what they're buying. But you also want to make it easier for them to like, this is how we might sell it. They might not agree. They might change it.
Yeah.
But I think that does help your pitch because it makes it answers some questions that otherwise they would just have to answer themselves.
You don't have to put the dogs in. I'm realizing how this would work. You could put a bunch of like dog items or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, but it has to say 100 dogs in the box.
Oh no, that's the I had that same thought.
Okay, cool.
So I was telling Dale was working up the one sheet.
Yeah.
The draft of it.
Yeah.
And I was saying, oh, we need to put the components. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, it should say, because that's the other thing about the game that we were when we play testing it is that it is just a deck of cards,
right?
There's no score sheet. And so the rules don't require you to keep track of that much.
Yeah.
And that was important to us as the design because we didn't want any other components. Mm-hmm. And so it'll just say contents, 100 dogs.
Yeah.
I love that.
Right?
But, I mean, put it on top on the box too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Marketing. In slightly bigger text than you'd normally put it. Yeah.
100 dogs included.
Yeah. Well, 100 good dogs.
100 good dogs.
Because we talked about this during our episodes is that one of the... And this was a big point that you made, which is that in the world of dog pile, all dogs are good dogs.
All dogs are good.
None of our cards are they're all mischief makers, but none of them are, you know, mean,
right.
You know, or trying to hurt anybody.
Mm-hmm.
All dogs are good dogs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No reactive dogs with traumatic histories.
Yeah.
Yes.
The irony of this is I don't take my dogs to the dog park because they're not dog park dogs. But I am a dog park person, if that makes sense. And so I do miss going to the dog park.
Yeah.
I'll play this game instead.
Hey, folks. Mark here, all by my lonesome in the middle of the show. It's going to be a little short one today, just to thank you for putting up with our week in and week out promotion of Glom, which just came out. And you can still go and buy that. Nicegames.club/Glom, but I'm not here to talk about that. I just want to say thank you so much for putting up with us, not just in the middle of the show, but throughout the entire show. We don't know how you manage it. And if you'd like to manage even more, patreon.com/nicegamesclub.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
A lot of this is the work I've just been doing the past 2 days with me and Dale putting this together. And so I'm going to throw up the one sheet that Dale worked out, which just sort of describes. Now, we were going to pare this down a little bit so that some of this is a little bit wordier than we'll ultimately want.
I was just going to ask you to do that, to collapse the top. Cool.
Yeah.
Picture of a dog card or a dog pile.
Yeah. So, I want to show off. The cards are the half-size cards.
Yeah.
Because we lay them out on a table, so you can't have full-size cards for this. Something we determined in playtesting.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I want a couple of photos. Now, I will be mocking these together. We don't have time to produce proper prototypes for this.
Right.
But I do kind of want a couple of key images. It's like, one, the laid-out game board, so in a grid like the dominoes layout, the pile, right?
Yeah.
Because that's one of the, it'll be in the rule book, players can follow it if they want, is that when they add to the dog pile, you do not, you do not like sort the deck, you just, it's a pile of dogs.
Yeah.
That's important. Mm-hmm. And then I also want like someone's hand holding the deck just to show like this is the, it's just a small tiny thing with 100 dogs.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Just to kind of like, a little bit door-to-door salesman kind of imagery that I kind of want.
You could, like, show that you can tear it, but you can't tear it because the cards are so strong. too literal.
We'll think about it. We'll think about it. So I was thinking ages 10 and up. Dale was saying 6 and up. And I think that when you want to define this, you probably want to go as low as reasonable. Okay. Or as low as possible, not like a, you know, average, but I don't know what you guys think about that.
I'm thinking about playing with my nephews, and you could. Like, I would probably direct said nephews to be like, okay, I need you to find, because you could point them to the colors or the numbers, right? You can say, I need you to find, are there any other, you could talk it through with them. They might not necessarily be able to play it by themselves with a bunch of other kids the same age, but like they could definitely participate and contribute to the cooperative play.
Right. As a family game. You could, yeah, 6 and up is an easy argument.
Yeah.
And so I guess this is a question of like, you want to make sure when you say these things, especially when things like how long does it take to teach a game? Mm-hmm. Like there's an inherent amount of lying that has to happen. Like everyone underestimates how long it takes to teach a game.
Yeah.
GLOM was simple because like it's impossible to underestimate.
Yeah.
Like it takes almost no time to teach GLOM.
Here's card 1. Here's card 2. Here's card 3.
Go.
Game.
Yeah. It's really easy to teach. Didn't stop us from writing a 4-page rule book. But...
Right.
Well, that was mostly because we used some archaic language and it took up a lot of space.
Yeah. But I mean, that's that I think is the platonic ideal of a board game is it takes literally no time to learn, but all of the edge cases are in the rule book if you need them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we did a brilliant job with that on GLOM. And so, but it means that when you have these stats and you're trying to sell it, like, you want to make sure that when you say 2 to 5 players, you don't actually mean it's really a 3-player game. It's technically possible for 4, but it's no fun.
Yeah.
Right. You want to make sure that what you're actually saying is a sort of honest impression.
Fun with 2 and fun with 5.
Yeah, and so I was thinking of like, is 6+ in that zone, or am I being too worried about that?
Oh, for the age.
Yeah, like 8+ or 10+ feels more like more like what I would say to a publisher. But I don't know. I guess I don't know where the fuzzy lines are.
I think this is maybe something to ask about.
Yeah,
you know, during your visit to Origins.
Yeah, that is a good thing that we should ask about specifically.
And how those things are generally like evaluated and communicated, because the thing is like. Okay, Chutes and Ladders is 6+ or probably like 4+, and I am bored as heck playing that game.
Right.
So like, it's technically 4+, but
it's 14 minus.
I was going to say it's probably more like 10-8 minus.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like it's not the game at that point. I'm rarely playing games just because I like the game. Usually playing, especially board games or tabletop games. I'm playing it because I like being with the people who I'm playing with. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. Ask about that. Ask about that. Because like, yeah, I don't have fun playing Chutes and Ladders, but it's certainly rated for my age.
Well, that's the difference. I think that's the difference when it comes to like how video games are rated versus I think this like ages rating, which is this is just about who can understand it.
Yeah.
And that's why it's something plus, right? I think it's like suitable for is a different question, right?
Yeah.
I would go 7+.
Yeah,
7.35 plus.
Splitting the difference.
7.7.
We did some science on this.
Seven if they're like a older for their school year. And No. I don't know. I would go 7.
I just don't know any 6-year-olds. we should ask Gabe. Actually, never mind. I do know a 6-year-old.
Yeah.
Well, Gabe's an advanced game player.
That's true.
But I guess that's kind of what you do. It's like, what is the minimum?
Right.
Right. It's like it's not every person 6 and up.
Gabe
it's like
could play.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I think 6+ makes. I think it's fine.
Okay. Stick with
especially 6. If we're doing it for Origins, that's fine.
Yeah.
You can ask.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah,
This is
and that'll be feedback
pitch.
A publisher will have is like I don't know because they'll see the game, right?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. They're not shipping it.
Right.
Based on the sell sheet alone.
Right.
Right. It's. I think the thing. When it comes to some of these little granular details, that what ends up and it stacks on itself, which is like you want to make the person you're pitching to have the easiest time understanding.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you just want to give them no barrier to to work with it, but also to like that feedback is like useful, but it also it's like it then it means it's longer from the pitch to the resolution of the pitch, right?
Right.
If you have to sort of clarify stuff or whatever, like I'm sure a publisher is like, oh, that doesn't sound right. It should be 10 plus, and I'm sure doesn't make them less likely to buy the game.
Yeah.
It just takes some time away from the process.
Right.
That yeah.
On the other all hand, at the margins, really.
On the other hand, what you are trying to do is to spark a conversation.
Yeah.
Right. So I think 6 is great. Can you scroll back up?
Yeah.
So what Dale has done here is she's laid out in a table in this Google Doc.
A game of like wags and wagers.
Yeah. That, I was getting to that, Stephen.
Okay, sorry.
on the top row of this table, and this table is, you know, it takes up one page.
Yeah.
Right? It's a one pager. We've got on the top left picture of a dog card or a dog pile, and then contents, 100 dogs. And then we have on the right column of this first row, we have dog pile logo, which is where you'll put the logo that you made. Uh-huh. And then these amazing examples of potential taglines, one of which was, Stephen.
Game of wags and wagers.
I know. Yeah. It's so good.
Dale was like, I know you don't actually wager anything in this game, but I like it. I'm like, yeah, that's good.
You wager like a little.
Too. Yeah. You risk and like it's, I think that implies something the game is not, but I do like it a lot.
That's
yeah,
the thing.
That's yeah. true though.
Because that's where we are. Fall short of some of this stuff is like we do need to take the history of board games and the state of the board game industry as it is when we do things like slogans right. and details, because we want to make sure we're not hooking into terminology, language, impressions that we don't understand.
Oh my gosh, that's true.
Yeah, and I think that there is a wagering component, but it doesn't rise to the level of
I think
putting it on the tagline.
Exactly.
Yeah, my impression is that when a board game aficionado hears the word wager, they kind of understand what you mean, and we don't understand like the boundaries of that category.
I would expect something to be from the tagline to be a very core element of the game's dynamics, and this is one, but it's not like. It's also, now what would be interesting is if you change it to a cooperative game of wags and wagers.
Oh, okay.
Because that might soften the wagering bit a little bit.
It also implies the depth that we want from it, which is that like, it is a lot about personal risk, but it's about collective goals.
Yeah, and that's when I like the third optional tag, or the third option for the tagline as well, which is a cooperative game. Ooh, game.
I got it. I'll fix it. I'll fix
thank
it.
You.
I'll
fix it.
I'll fix it,
Mark.
I'll fix it. I'll get rid of it. I'll fix it.
Thank you.
Okay. I fixed it.
Oh, yeah. Thank good. Good thing we took this episode to do that.
Uh-huh.
A cooperative game of canine harmony.
Mm-hmm.
I like that one a lot.
That one feels too wordy to me.
Oh, yeah. It's a good
one. Personally. I'm like, I'm already bored by the time I get to
cooperative game of.
Not gonna lie.
Dog harmony. Is it the word canine? No. It's harmony.
No, canine is fine. It's a fun word.
That one's lyrical, which I like about it. It makes it okay. It's a little longer. But yeah, maybe
it's just you're reading like 6 synonyms before you get to the fun part, which is dogs, canine. Well,
here's the interesting thing, though, right? Is like harmony is part of like the theme and the goal.
Yeah.
But like there's other than cooperative, there's nothing really about how the game is played. Whereas wagers has a little bit in there.
Yeah, the question is like, what's the function of a tagline? Is just to get you revved up about the experience playing it? Like, you will have fun, or like,
there you go.
Or this is a game that is of a type you already like, or a type that you might be interested in. Right? There's a different like, there's no one job the tagline has to do, and it can do one at the expense of another.
Yeah.
But I don't have an opinion as to what the aim should be, whether it should hint really strongly at the mechanics.
Yeah.
Or be much more about like this is the sort of the moment joy you can expect to have.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking up some games here.
Now the GLOM tagline does both, right?
Yeah,
right.
And that's wordy in a way that makes sense for the game.
Because
it's about words and a bunch of different words, right? So like that makes sense. But
right.
This game, it is kind of fast paced, and I just feel like the tagline should be shorter and snappy.
Yeah.
I don't know why I have opinions on taglines all of a sudden, but I guess I do.
I mean, great. No, it's good. It's the kind of thing where it's like it helps. Because the thing about it is like, and this is a lesson for you folks out there making your games, video games, board games, whatever, is that a lot of these things have multiple right answers.
Yes.
And so it like you still have to come up with an answer because that's how you present it.
Yeah.
And that's what the game becomes. Right. Just because it could be something else and that something else is equally as good, mm-hmm. doesn't mean you don't have to make a choice.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And so when we present this game, now again, a publisher might have an opinion on some of those things, but I think the pitch is stronger when we go in with answers to these questions.
Yes.
And then they can, you know, as long as we express our willingness to move if reasonably asked. But I think just, yeah, the fewer of these things we answer, the more just up in the air it is. Mm. Even when you kind of know, oh, there's probably 7 good ways to do it.
Yeah.
Like picking one of those good ways. And then that also, you know, the whole holisticness that I always go on about, it impacts all the other stuff.
Mm-hmm. I did a little bit of impromptu research on BoardGameGeek.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because a lot of the games that I was just clicking on, because they were like at the top of the list that they're making you look at.
Yeah.
That sounded kind of mean that you're being prompted to look at, because they're probably really cool.
Uh-huh.
And they do look really cool, but the boxes are huge. These are big, hefty games.
Yeah.
And so they don't necessarily have a tagline on there, right? But like, here's one, Darwin's Journey. The box doesn't have a tagline on the front, mm-hmm. but the way that they've listed it on BoardGameGeek is retrace Darwin's journey to the Galapagos in a worker placement adventure, right? So worker placement is a type of game. Right. Yeah. It's a type of gameplay. And so you kind of know from that one line, and maybe that line is on the box somewhere, but not necessarily on the front. Anyway, you kind of know what type of game that is. So,
yeah.
But where you say like a riot of rewording remarks, mm-hmm. you know, it's a word game and you know, it's a party game because it says rewording remarks and it's riot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Right. And you know, and also it implies, when you learn more about the game, the slogan makes even more sense.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right? It's not an apples to apples game. It's something other than that, right?
Yeah.
And that was sort of a goal of the thing. So that's what makes that slogan perfect. Mm-hmm. I will say the best board game slogan of all time.
Oh.
Oh boy. Oh boy.
I'll accept an argument. is for Warhammer 40K.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Which
continue.
Is yes. I really remember this. This really hooked me as a kid, yeah. seeing it on that box.
Yeah.
In the grim darkness of the far future, there is only war.
Yeah, that's true. That's an amazing
tagline. It is, I mean, like, I don't like that as a philosophy or something well, to get excited yeah. about.
Sure.
Like, I don't like war games anymore. But yeah. as a kid, I remember really being, sold by that. And even now, it's like, that is what that game is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, yes, you're laughing with your friends on a pool table, probably, when you play that game. But that's what, I mean, again, one of the other things I like is like your experience doesn't have to match the theme, right?
Yeah.
yeah.
And so that is such a perfect distillation of what that game is, because it's like, yeah, there's no negotiation. It's all dice and tables. It's all numbers and hit points. Yeah, have at it. Like, I that mean, is the, you know.
As an outside observer, it seems to me that like 80% of Warhammer is painting minis. But that doesn't make for a very good tagline, does
right.
it?
Right. I didn't say Warhammer 40K is worth your time.
That's a good tagline, though, I guess.
I think Dale got a good start on this. I think we'll have to take some more cracks at it.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, this is a dry run, so it doesn't have to be worked this time through. And so I think the biggest part is the sort of like middle section of this page, which is the sort of like gameplay paragraph, the sort of meat of it, right? Mm-hmm. The sidebar with some bullet points, the logos and pictures, all of that we can get a really simple handle on. It's the how do we distill the thing. And so mm-hmm. Dale put together this as sort of a way to tell the story. Now, this is very early draft. Like, which, you know, we're using the term pack leader, which we immediately was like, we're never going to use that term.
No.
Right.
But we didn't have a replacement. So it's still in all our notes. Mm. And so it's going to remain there until we have something else to say with it. So we'll probably have to figure something out, even if it's temp.
Yeah.
So the way Dale put it here is objective, get as many dogs as possible into the dog pile. And I think that's a good thing to start with. Like, it's like, you don't know how to do that, what the rules are, but like that in your mind as you read this, I think is very helpful. Choose dogs from your hand based on the traits of the pack leader or the card that's laid out in the center. Reveal all your dogs, scramble to organize them into a grid, which is the dog park. So this is very dry. So this, we'll have to make this a little bit more exciting. But this describes the steps of the game in as few words as possible.
Yeah.
I think that was the goal Dale had putting into it. Wager too many dogs, they might not get along, and then nobody gets into the dog pile.
Yeah.
So again, wager, I don't know if that was the right term for this, but like, I think that idea of like the risk-reward system of the game, even if it's not, because it's not laid out in the rules, but that is something that we need to tell people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's like, that's how you play this game, is you put down a bunch of dogs to meet your objective, but the more dogs you put on, the more likely it's all going to fall apart, because that's what happens when you put a bunch of dogs in a room.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think that, expressing that, I think is important. So that's like right in the middle of this, which is good. And then some more, you know, what happens if they do, what happens if they don't, and then get as many dogs in the dog pile within the allocated number of rounds. We'd probably be a little bit more poetic with this language, like, you know, because we talked about around equaling a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
We might just say by the end of the, before the park closes or something, right? We'd say that. Can your team of dog wranglers get all 100 dogs into the dog pile? Because that's the thing, is that you're really going for a high score, and then getting all 100 dogs is like the ultimate goal, but you don't have to get that right.
Yeah, yeah.
But again, we don't need to be very literal about that. We can just, that phrasing is correct, whether you interpret it one way or the other.
So you guys are leaving like Thursday.
Yeah.
So do we need this done by...
It's Monday today for listeners.
Yeah. Yes, it is Monday. And so
we have a couple of days to get this going. Now, we're going to be driving the car for 13 hours, and my car has a power outlet in it, so we can work on it.
Are you going to print it there?
No. Well, we could. Oh. We'll be at a hotel. It probably has it, but I don't want to rely on that. You have a color printer, Dale tells me, Ellen. So
Dale.
We were going to try
to... How did she know?
We were going to maybe have you print it for us. But that requires us being able to print this by Thursday evening.
How did she know?
I don't know.
You must have told her.
When would I talk about that?
Is that a family secret? Or
no, it's not. It's just like a weird thing to talk about. So like, why? How would she know that?
It's an ancient heirloom passed down from generation to generation.
Since the ancient days of 2002.
Right, exactly. Yeah. No, I don't. I've got a color printer because sometimes you want to print in color. Yeah. And Eric likes to have, if you're going to have a tech thing, you might as well have a nice tech thing.
Uh huh.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's why we have a color print laser. We have a color laser printer. Okay.
All right. You don't have to explain yourself.
Yeah. Anyway, we do. Dale is correct.
Wait, a color laser printer?
Yeah, man.
Oh, dang. Now I'm excited.
Like I said, if you're going to have a tech thing, this is not my philosophy. But, you know, uh-huh. I live with someone who has that philosophy. So by default, all my tech things are nice as well.
Yeah.
I reap the benefits. Yep. No. I want to know what else Dale knows about my house that she shouldn't or know.
We'll ask her. That's the next episode.
It'll be a future episode. Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. Okay. So we got some work to do.
So the end of the document here just has a couple of things, and this matches our Glom cell sheet, playtime, teach time, a link to the episode where we came up with it.
Smart.
Which, I mean, I think this is valuable. I don't think it moved anybody when we did it for Glom. It certainly, as we like worked with the Indie Boards and Cards, they just seemed totally uninterested in the story of how this game was, how Glom was made.
Yeah.
And it's like, fair enough. You know how to sell these things. But I think we should still put it on the sell sheet just in case it hooks anybody.
Yeah.
And then, you know, after Gen Con, we have our meetings, people will have something to listen to hear us as designers. And that's cool.
So you're going to float this at Origins, get some feedbacks from some folks, and then we can make another pass of revisions for Gen Con.
Yes, that's the plan. And so the things we would need for this dry run are to... I want this cell sheet to look good.
Okay.
I want the art done for it.
That's you.
That's me. I want, you know, we got to polish up the copy to make it good. And then I think like the current balance is what it is. I don't think we have time to make any changes. And it's pretty good, I think.
It is.
It's not final. I think you're not happy with it, Steven.
Still needs work.
But it's definitely playtestable. It's definitely demoable as long as we just, you know, preempt it like this is, you know, whatever.
It's not balanced yet. Fully balanced.
And so that means if we can get that into the updated card art, which I've started, and get that into Tabletop Simulator this week, that would be great. And Dale is going to start putting that together. She knows how to use the Photoshop templates to generate all the cards.
Yeah.
So I'm making that template for her. And so if you, Stephen, if you do want to take a quick peek at the spreadsheet,
just for like quick balance.
If you want, if there's any, just like, oh, this is fine, check. Or I'll just take a look.
Did you just ask me to look at a spreadsheet, Mark?
I did.
I'm gonna say no.
He knew what he was asking.
Good point.
He knew what he was asking.
Yep. And then Ellen will need your printer for 5 minutes, and
I can. Yeah, I don't know if I have time to do like anything in life right now, but I can also wordsmith maybe a little bit.
Yeah. Mm. When it comes to the game itself,
yeah.
Dale and I looked through the notes that we had. Now, the notes for Dogpile take a couple forms. We had three meetings in December where we workshopped the game.
Mm-hmm.
And each of those meetings has notes that, Stephen, you took that included ideas and changes to the rules. We have our original two episodes that we did for Dogpile that have the original version of the thing. We don't have a document that actually puts it all together.
Yeah.
I'm working on that.
Oh, yeah?
That's my contribution.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah,
that would be great to have to leave behind.
Yeah,
is a first draft rule book. Now the thing is Dale and I were taking a look at this yesterday, and I was like, "Oh, is there a place where all these rules exist?" And I'm like, "Oh, I don't know."
But then we remembered that Dale was also taking notes on the whiteboard here in the clubhouse, and we should took pictures of all of that.
Right.
And so if you just, and everything is time stamped, so if you, so it's deducible, but Ellen, that's going to be your job then, is putting that into one document.
Okay.
And I was able to at least, part, I drew on my memory a little bit for this, not all totally from the notes, but the notes confirmed all that for me. I think the game is, I don't want to say done, but the rules are, like, we've got it. The, the only question I have is there are two modes in the game now, competitive and cooperative.
Right.
And there's one, it's a very simple tweak. Cooperative mode is the game as is. Mm. Competitive mode is the same thing, but when you, when the group scores the a dog pile in a round, you get as many points as dogs you contributed.
Yeah.
So you don't need to pull them out of the thing. You remember how many put down. So again, no tracking on a scorecard. Mm-hmm. Although I suppose you will long term, you'll want to track.
Yeah.
And then if the dog pile fails, you lose that many points.
Right.
So that's the risk for the putting too many down.
Yeah.
It's the only tweak. And so the question is like, do we phrase this as a game that has two modes, or do we frame it as a cooperative game that has a competitive version if you want, or do we want to, this is a bigger conversation this episode has time for, so we won't get into it too deeply, but I want first impressions.
Yeah.
Could this be a cooperative game that has scores and is the competitive version is the default rules?
Oh, I think it should be cooperative.
Yeah, yeah, I think we should lead with cooperative. And
yeah. Okay. Kind of how
it's
the
a game about
was
dogs. It's a game about dog harmony. We lead with cooperative.
The only argument I would say towards that is that the competitive mode ensures the risk reward motivations that was a big part of our working sessions, trying to make sure that we ensured that. I don't think the cooperative version is broken in that way, but knowing how little that tweak, how little of a tweak that is, and how much good it does on that score, makes me think like, ooh.
Let's take a look at the first draft of the rules and see what we want to do.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Okay. Is once you've got that put together, you will probably have a really good impression as to like, if that adds a lot, or is it just, or is, does it just change some things?
Okay.
So we'll put that in your hands for now.
All right.
All right.
That's it.
That's it.
Good luck.
All right.
We're off.
The engine started. Let's get going. Grab your bags.
All right.
We'll report back about stuff we've seen and saw and how Glom went.
Mm-hmm.
When we get back. That's our show. For show notes to links on this and other special episodes, go to our website, nicegames.club. Visit us on Twitter and Mastodon at Nice Games Club, where Dale tweets about game dev resources and overlaying lines on a camera.
It's really cool.
It's a very cool technique, yeah.
Huh.
We like hearing from you, so tweet and toot back or email us, contact@nicegames.club. Nice Game Club is on Patreon. Support the show and get stuff, including ad-free episodes. Sign up at patreon.com/nicegamesclub. And if you want to keep things more casual, just stop by nicegames.club/discord and say hello, where they are playing Glom in the Discord.
Yes, they are.
It's very cool. So join in and see if you can get a good score. Next week, we'll be looking at Finding Help Fast and Companions. That's it for this week. So until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice. I lost my train of thought. It was just such a happy thought. Yeah. I stopped.